This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel. In the Seattle of the early 1900s, a young man named Harry got lots of attention from both the media and the police. He dressed sharply in natty suits and hats. He also got in fights. He ran around with criminals and prostitutes. And according to the papers, more than one woman committed suicide because Harry broke her heart. One of the things that made Harry particularly noteworthy, though, he was actually a young woman named Nell Pickerel. Regular KUOW guest Knute Berger wrote about Nell for Crosscut recently, and in the piece he draws parallels between the boom and bust Seattle of the early 1900s and the boom and bust Seattle of today. Knute, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
So, first of all, what commonalities did you find between Seattle in the early 1900s and Seattle today?
Well, Seattle of the early 1900s was a boomtown. We were growing as a city, and there were a couple of interesting forces going on. One was Seattle was coming out of the effects of the Great Recession of 1893, financial collapse, which had created a huge number of itinerant workers, people left homeless, people without jobs, broken families, and those people came to the one city that seemed to have a lot going for it, which was Seattle. And it had a lot of jobs for manual laborers. In fact, the Pacific Northwest, we had fishing, logging, the railroad industry, agriculture, all the kinds of things that anybody could do if they were strong enough to, lift a hoe or wield an axe. And at the same time, this growth was being fueled by the boom that came during and after the Klondike. So you had the city was just growing like crazy, had a huge social problem developing with crime and poverty, and at the same time, tremendous prosperity.
You write about Nell Pickerel as someone who clearly did not fit neatly into the role society expected her to play. She dressed as a man. She had jobs that usually belonged to men, bartender, cowboy, that kind of thing. So what was Seattle like for her and people like her?
It was a really tough place. First of all, for women, it was tough. The Pacific Northwest had, at the turn of the century, about a 14-to-1 gender gap male. So the Pacific Northwest was male-dominated, and women were few and far between, and there was large numbers of prostitutes that came in to, in effect, service the itinerant, sailors and loggers and that kind of thing. So it was difficult from that perspective. There just wasn't a lot of room for women except in very specific kind of married or prostitute. It's a very difficult situation that way. For Nell, and she, from a very early age apparently, felt like she wanted to be a boy. She dressed as a boy. When she got pregnant at 16, had a child whose father abandoned them. Child was raised in the family. But she was attracted to male activities. There's a record of her up in a boomtown in the Cascades when she was 18 years old, and they arranged women fights as part of their entertainment, and she would dress as a man and fight other women in this town that was described as a place where the scum of the earth gathered to dig the Great Cascade Railroad Tunnel. She was arrested frequently because she insisted on dressing as a man, and fooled many people. Many people thought she was a man, but when they would discover that she was in fact a woman, she was arrested on vagrancy charges, or it was illegal for women to be unescorted in a saloon. She would be arrested for that. And she got into a lot of trouble on her own. But she was sort of on the list of usual suspects. If the police had to, do a roundup of regular troublemakers, she was often on the list.
Were there other women like Nell in Seattle during this time? Were there women who tried to pass as men?
Nobody. I didn't come across any that had a public profile. I'm sure there were. The scholars who've looked at the frontier period say that cross-dressing was quite common. Women often dressed as men to disguise the fact that they were women for safety. They're the people like Calamity Jane. You know, we know of some very prominent examples. There were women who lived as men and didn't want anybody to know they were women, and they, you know, they weren't discovered to be female until they were dead. You know, that kind of thing. So there were cases like that, but very uncommon for there to be somebody who is really very public about it. Hmm. She almost, I think after a while, you get the sense that she really liked the publicity. She liked, there was a part of her that was acting out, but maybe also a part of her that liked getting the attention. And the newspapers at first were very sympathetic. They would talk about what a handsome boy she made and how well-dressed she was and how what a great physique she had. And they sort of said, yeah, she makes a really great man.
I'm talking with Knut Berger. He wrote in Crosscut about a young woman named Nell Pickerel. She lived in Seattle in the early 20th century, and she dressed as a man and in many cases tried to pass as a man. How did you learn about her? How did you learn about this woman?
Well, I learned about her by accident. I was researching the turn of the century Seattle bike culture. I came across an article about a woman dressed as a man riding a bike recklessly, and that was Nell Pickerel. She, it was illegal to ride your bike without your hands on the handlebars or at high speed. They called those scorchers, and she was scorching along a Seattle street with her hands off. Very, very Nell Pickerel-ish, and she was arrested. And they couldn't charge her with being dressed as a man because technically that wasn't illegal, but the eyebrows were raised. And it wasn't terribly relevant to the article I was writing, but I put it aside and I thought, I need to know more about this person. She sounds really interesting.
So what was it that got you to write about her? What was the tipping point for you?
Well, after I finished the bike series, I just went back and began looking at her. And one of the things that struck me as I read, I went into the microfilm and looking in digital databases and old newspapers, and one of the things that struck me was that she fit the profile of many sort of what we think of today as youth at risk, a person from a troubled home. She had an abusive father, a teen pregnancy, then kind of out on her own. And, you know, we would regard her today as LGBTQ, which is, you know, in King County, there are 4,000 to 5,000 kids at any one time who are considered homeless, and 20 to 40% fall into that category. So she struck me as a very contemporary figure in that sense and somebody that we could really relate to.
Hmm. Well, in your article, you acknowledge that you're choosing to talk about Nell as a she. You chose to use a female pronoun. But if she lived today, we would probably be using masculine pronouns to talk about her. So why did you identify Nell as a woman throughout your article?
I did because I felt that the article was trying to highlight the attitude of the time that she lived in, that what was shocking to people was that she not only dressed as a man, she wanted to live as a man. She had female lovers. She, at one point, had a woman who was identified as her wife. and I just felt that it was true to what her time is. And because we don't know, really, she gave some different accounts of herself. So we don't really know what she would have chosen. I think the preponderance of the evidence is she regarded herself as Harry. She used two last names, Harry Allen and Harry Livingston. And I think that nowadays we would regard her as a he. But in the context of the time and the way the publicity coalesced around her, it had to do with the fact that she was a woman living a man's life.
You talked earlier about how the media wrote about Nell Pickerel. You talked about how the police often picked Nell up as a usual suspect. Why do you think Nell got so much attention?
What she did really shocked sensibilities. And the thing that really tipped it over was that there were several cases where she had, in the Victorian parlance, had seduced young women. She had female admirers who then, supposedly, when they found out she was actually a man, attempted suicide. One shot herself in Denny Park, another drank carbolic acid. And this fit a kind of Victorian narrative of usually men bringing women to ruin. And in this case, it had the added sort of tabloid twist of a woman pretending to be a man bringing women to ruin. But it fit a narrative that Victorian newspaper readers really ate up.
It almost sounds like Nell was fictionalized in some ways.
I think she was. If you read a lot of articles about her, she was the coverage of, first of all, she traveled around the Northwest, so a lot of local papers had local stories. And she was arrested in Tacoma and Ritzville and Spokane, various places. So she got around. The other thing is that the newspapers weren't very fact-oriented. So there's a lot about her life we really don't know. I mean, you have to kind of piece it together out of reading a lot of clippings, but some of them are contradictory. A lot of them are very speculative. She was said to have had an outlaw as a lover, a male outlaw. They found a picture of Nell and this outlaw in his pocket after he was killed. There were a lot of kind of romancing about her kind of criminal activity. And, of course, people were fascinated by the sexual and gender aspect of it. So it made a story that people loved to write about, and she was widely known.
I'm talking with Knut Berger. He wrote a piece in Crosscut about a woman named Nell Pickerel who lived in early 20th century Seattle. And she lived openly as a man. She had female lovers. She dressed like a man. She tried to pass as a man. And we're talking about what Knut learned when he started researching her life and what he learned about Seattle at the time as well. I have to say, when you talk about Nell Pickerel, it seems obvious that you like her.
Her, him, both.
Yes.
I do.
You like this person.
I do like this person. And, I mean, of course, as a parent, you look at it and you can see she had a troubled background. She got into trouble. She got involved with drugs and alcohol later. There was some self-destructive behavior going on. But there's also a way in which you just see that somebody really bucking the tide. You know, somebody who's really determined to be themselves, even though that self is completely contrary to society's norms. And there's kind of a courage I see in her that and a connection that I see with her that made me really, want to reach out and sort of be sympathetic, that, you know, somehow take care of her almost.
What happened to Nell?
Well, she had her problems continued to get worse, and her legal problems, her many arrests, she was often let off with either a fine or no charge. So a lot of that was harassment, but it took a toll. She ended up in about 1919. She was actually stabbed by her father. She survived, but was badly injured. They were both drinking and got into an argument, but I think he had a reputation anyway as an abusive man. And then there's stories where she was arrested in an opium raid and she turned an informer to the police on prohibition. Prohibition was voted in 1916 and Nell became an informant. But the picture you put together is a life kind of unraveling. And she died in 1920. She was only 40 years old. From syphilitic meningitis. So there were clearly both health and mental issues involved going on.
Well, and the piece is on Crosscut's website as part of the Kids at Risk series. Why was Nell a kid at risk?
Well, I just saw parallels between so many of the experience of so many what we think of as kids at risk today and back then. And back at the turn of the century, I mean, now we have support. I mean, we recognize that LGBTQ kids have special needs. They're counselors that can have experience and can address some of those issues. You know, turn of the century Seattle, there was nothing. There was no social safety net. You had some of the very first they called humane officers, which actually kind of evolved out of the Humane Society and ended up being working under the police department. And their job was to protect abused animals. But then they began to extend that to include women and children. And so you began to see people dealing with runaways, dealing with spousal abuse issues and that kind of thing. But it was really in its infancy. So there was really no place for somebody like Nell to go. It was basically, you know, jail or the saloons or, you know, out on the streets. That's an experience a lot of people are still having, even with the programs and shelters and drop-in centers and things that we have now. So it's a chronic problem. It's not something that takes care, you know, just goes away because you develop those things. And I thought that it would be something that people today could relate to and also make them aware of the persistence of these issues.
Well, when you look at what happened to Nell and what wasn't available to her in terms of services, in terms of help, in terms of outreach, and you look at what Seattle can do today for particularly kids who are at risk, what do you see? What are we doing right? What are we not doing yet?
Well, I think one of the things that we're doing right is that there are a lot of places to catch kids in the system now. In other words, but I, you know, there's still big issues, issues with what happens with kids of Nell's age who transfer, say, out of foster care and into adulthood. I think we understand sort of how to deal with little children in some ways better than we do the sort of 18 to 23 or 24 year olds who can get into so much trouble and don't necessarily have the sympathy of society. And I do think there's certainly in Seattle, when it comes to gender, there's certainly a much greater awareness of people who might have the issues that Nell had. And I think that's a great step forward. But it's still something that people are struggling with, particularly in the transgender community. It's something that parents don't understand, that, you know, a lot of people don't understand. This clearly, for Nell, wasn't something that she chose.
Knut Berger writes for Crosscut and is editor-at-large for Seattle Magazine. He's also a frequent guest here at KUOW. He told us about Nell Pickerel, a woman who dressed and in many cases passed as a man in early 20th century Seattle. Knut wrote about Nell for Crosscut, and you can find a link to his fascinating article about Nell at kuow.org. This is The Record from KUOW. I'm Jeannie Yandel.